this is Allah's month. So how can we plunge into Allah? And as we know, Sheikh Musaffer has written beautifully about this month in the Irshad. So if you, I would suggest reading that. If you don't have a copy, you can borrow one from here. Or now, you know, it's online. It's, and I don't know what, how much it costs, but I don't think it's that much. So one of the things that occurred to me that we could do every day is recite the essential names of God. It says the, and so they are Yahai, let's see, the living, the knowing, Ya Alim, Ya Murid, is the one who desires, you know, and that comes from, I was a hidden treasure and I desired, I longed to be known, and I brought forth creation. And then, so that comes with the all-capable, the able one, Ya Qadir. And then the hearing, Ya Sami, Ya Basir, the seeing, and the speaking. So it's very interesting, you know, when you, so Allah does not just have the transcendent qualities, but has the qualities like us. So maybe we have Allah's qualities, but it's beautiful to think of Allah as the hearing and the seeing and the speaking. Sheikh Noor would often say, Ya Sami, Ya Basir. That was one of his, you know, preferred. He would say it sometimes, just, and we say it too, just before you say the final Yahu in the Salah, Ya Sami, Ya Basir. So, but with the emphasis also on the two, Ya Sami, Ya Basir, and also the one who is beyond all. So I thought that to contemplate these in this month, and you can contemplate them by reciting them, you know, I thought either seven times each, seven times a day, or you can contemplate them simply by meditating on them and feeling, you know, that you are that, you are embodying that name and seeing and feeling that as you are enacting one of those qualities, such as seeing, recognizing that it is Allah's seeing, that we are not seeing on our own, it's really Allah's seeing, and it's Allah's hearing, and it's Allah's speaking. So, alhamdulillah. Also, I think the 99 is good to recite the 99 names of Allah in this time. You know, I began seeing that really everything is speaking of Allah, because I thought also of sending out, you know, that first part of Irshad, which is so beautiful, where Effendi speaks of Allah, and it's in the very first pages. Mm-hmm. And so it's his song, really, to Allah. And then there are others who speak of Allah. And then I realized that everyone is speaking of Allah all the time. That's the only one we are always talking about, really, is Allah, whether we are aware or not. But of course, the friends of Allah speak of Allah consciously and, you know, in love and in awe of Allah. And so, in that beautiful prayer of Ali, Hazreti Ali, radiallahu an, you know, he says that only who knows where he is or how he is or who he is. And that's also a very beautiful kind of description. By it's like a kind of description of Allah by eliminating description, you know. Allah is not anything that we can know, but Allah is the one who knows. So if I can, I would like to send out some of these great passages on Allah. And then I thought, why stay within the Abrahamic tradition? Why not go, you know, the Bhagavad Gita also has amazing descriptions of Allah. So we'll see. But I think to go with consciousness that this is Allah's month, you know. And of course, when we think of Allah, you know, we ourselves become servant. The more we think of Allah in a sense, the more we become servant. And it is only by becoming absolute servant, by disappearing completely, then that we do, you know, that Allah takes us and we merge into Allah. And then Allah becomes the hearing by which we hear, the seeing by which we see. It's that beautiful hadith, you know, the one who approaches Allah by all these beautiful ways. Approaches Allah by both what Allah has asked us, and then even beyond that. So, you know, these 3 months, and so I'm very grateful to you, Amina, for really, you know, making us very cognizant of these 3 months, and so that we really receive their essence or their blessing. Just like a fruit. Otherwise, it's like a fruit you leave uneaten or half eaten, you know, mm-hmm. if we don't really be conscious every day that we are living this. And of course, then it's every day of our life. This is what came to me. You know, we saw this movie on waste that I spoke about. And but the worst of waste is the waste of ourself, the waste of our own life. Of every moment that we waste, you know, and we can waste it through, how do we waste it? We can waste it in our times and in our culture through entertainment, you know, because like distractions, there's so many wonderful distractions, which are kind of paradise delights, mm-hmm. you know, on earth, and we can think of many. But for the real seeker of God, they can become a waste if we indulge too much. It's not to say that we shouldn't have some, of course, and we all have some, each in our way, but to be aware of that. And that as long as we enjoy something with Allah, as long as we enjoy it consciously, that makes it no longer a wasted time. That makes it, you know, a blessed time. So, with gratitude. So gratitude is a great quality of this month. So we could say, let's cultivate gratitude in this month. Maybe that's a, you know, I'm kind of talking out loud to myself and to yourselves, because as I said, I didn't probably have the time that I wanted. I did take some notes, but to don't devote to this. So I think for this month, gratitude as a key. Amina, what else did you come to? Well, Amina, which is beautiful, also you suggested the 100 Yanur,
right.
A tesbih of Yanur. And one of Allah's descriptions is light. I mean, this is how Ibn Arabi speaks of the real as light, and that everything else is shadow, you know. So the more one... the deeper one goes, the more one disappears to oneself, the more light-filled we become. So he says the reality is pure light. So that's a beautiful also tesbih for this month, I think, Yanur. And to contemplate light, and to contemplate ourselves as light and everything as light, you know, to develop that scene where one can see everything as light. I mean, Sheikh Noor, as a college student, wrote this beautiful poem, All is Light. You know, and he was referring to one of the pre-Socratic poets.
All is water, and then from there he goes, because then in the last verse he says, he called this poet ancient brother.
Oh yeah, that's so beautiful.
Who said,
All is water. Mm-hmm. And he said, all is light.
I say, yeah. All is light.
And this was before he had any, I think, major initiation with any of his masters.
Right, because
you know?
he had just come into Yale. Yale University. Yeah.
It's a part of his biography we didn't know.
Well, it can be symbolic.
That's true. Yale could be jail. That's true.
Sheikha, would you mind repeat the names you mentioned? Al-Alim, Al-Hay,
Yeah, it's Yahai is the first, the living one, the knowing one, Ya'alim. Ya Murid. Ya Kadir. Ya Murid, Ya Kadir. And then Sami, Ya Sami, Ya Basir. And Ya Kalim, the speaking.
And can we repeat those names in the tasbih?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I think, and to contemplate them. So it's not just like a long, many repetitions. It's rather more contemplation of these, why, you know, that these are called the essential, seven essential qualities of God.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And gratitude. And also, the other one I thought, I might have mentioned that, Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Did I mention that? 99 times.
Right.
Because that's the merciful, as it says. I mean, Allah always qualifies himself or herself through mercy, through the Rahman and the Rahim. So obviously that's very important. And Effendi said that you can repeat it before sunset, in the afternoon time, late afternoon time, like just prior to sunset, 99 times. Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Yeah, I'd like to know what came about, Amina, in your... you had a meeting.
Mm-hmm.
With 40 people responded to Amina's...
But from where it comes to this thing of the seven Faryam, I didn't know...
I don't know where, all. Mystically, yeah. But Effendi mentions it somewhere in adornment or in... Or in Irsha, I think, so in a dormant of hearts.
They are called leading names?
Ibn Arabi,
leading?
Essential names.
Ah, okay.
Essential names.
These are the essential names of the whole 99.
I mean, you know, it's mysterious, because then Ibn Arabi also says the names that are closest to the names of the essence would be Ya Wahid, Ya Ahad. You know, that would be if one had to name the essence. But these are called the essential names, like the mother names out of which the other names flow. I mean, you know, that these the names, I don't know who, how that when this first came into the tradition, mm-hmm. maybe it was from the Prophet himself.
Mm.
But, you know, who, the living, these are, some, whatever, these qualify God. So it's very interesting. And of course, you can see that in the murid, in the desiring, is then, therefore, the love. You know, the living is the substratum of all life. That so Allah is the absolutely alive, the absolutely existing. Allah is the all-knowing. These seem to be the most, maybe, comprehensive names, or,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know, it's mysterious. It's mysterious why they don't have Yanur there, for instance, the light.
Mm-hmm.
But knowledge and light are often equated. But you would have thought, you know, Yahayu and Yanur would be there. But maybe the knowing is more fundamental, because it says that light is that through which we know. If we don't have light, we can't see, we can't know. So mm-hmm. maybe the Nur comes from the Alim. I don't know. It's very mysterious why these were chosen. But this is like a classic set, mm-hmm. because Ibn Arabi mentions these two. So it goes way back, you know, into the tradition.
So the point is to contemplate on them and not to add more
tesbih. Exactly.
To the,
and
do the tesbih that we have already
assigned. I think that's good, you know, to really try to see if we can actually do what we've been given. I think that's a good thing, right? Because we don't quite... It's amazing. I mean, I find it myself. I find rare is the day when, you know,
mm-hmm.
you can... It's very mysterious. And again, maybe that's a divine... It shows us how incomplete we are, or how, you know, frail we are. And so we're always, but it's okay. And that's what, you know, I sometimes tell people, that don't depend on yourself. This is another very important understanding to have toward Allah. Don't depend on yourself for anything. And so, you know, therefore we don't really have to, like, beat ourselves up all by ourselves in a closet. No, we turn to Allah, the All-Merciful, and we say, Allah, I am so incapable. I am so, you know, whether it be lazy or I'm tired, or you can complain to Allah. And mm-hmm. that's what Allah desires, is the relationship, actually. So that is, again, another, I would say, very important point to contemplate this month, is relationship to Allah, to deepen and to increase that relationship, to be more conscious all the time of mm-hmm. Allah, and to be helpless before Allah, to be needy. Someone addressed me recently, and, you know, like with neediness. They said, oh, I feel so needy. And I said, but that's great, but you just be needy toward Allah. And that's wonderful. Allah loves that neediness. Whereas, as humans, we get tired of it. You know, we do. We don't have, you know, endless capacity for each other's needs. But Allah does.
Yeah, I think it was Shams al-Tabriz that maybe in his book, is that there is the story of this saint, or maybe himself, I don't remember precisely, but that he goes to the heavens and then it says, I want to see Allah because I have something that Allah needs.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And then everyone is just, you know, laughing.
Yeah.
He says, Allah doesn't need anything, you know. Yes, I have something that he needs. Please let me see him.
Oh, he's telling the people of heaven.
Yeah. And then the angels are kind of disconcerted, and then they hear a voice say, yeah, let him in. And then that's the point, you know. He needs my need, because yeah. he doesn't need anything.
Right.
So
right.
I have need. And he needs my need.
Wow.
In order
that's
to...
That's beautiful. To be the Lord, or to be the generous, or to be...
Yeah. yeah.
That's beautiful. Mm-hmm. And Shams, in that...
I have this story associated with Shams al-Tabriz, but mm-hmm. I don't know exactly
yeah.
the source, if it's in his book that was translated
yeah.
recently.
Uh-huh. Right. That's beautiful. Alhamdulillah. I mean, do you realize what a difference it is from, you know, ordinary life or worldly life, where one has to, and in the world you do, you have to be strong and capable and all of these things, you know, to and look like you know what you're doing and all of that. That's very important. But really, toward Allah, one can melt completely and be completely insufficient and helpless and unworthy. Unworthy is another one. So many people are plagued by a sense of unworthiness today, you know. And this comes also from whatever, social ills, you know. Maybe parents not having enough time, or maybe it's just a human condition, I think, too, a deeper human condition. Our highest spirit, which is what we have, you know, then embodied all of a sudden in this earth and clay and sickness and, you know, all of these, what we consider lowly attributes. The angels themselves consider them lowly attributes. That's what's so funny. And sometimes, you know, if we smell, the angels are very sensitive. They're like highly sensitive. And that's why, you know, some people don't eat onions or garlic around, because the angels, it's the angels, not Allah, that doesn't like onions or garlic, it's the angels. And so we judge ourselves in that way, as lowly, as unworthy, and we're sick. We become sick in spirit from that. I mean, most everyone has to some degree that feeling. And, you know, but then you can be completely unworthy before Allah. That's what's so amazing in this world. You know, it's not so great to be seem so unworthy in the day of truth, you know, because then that means we will have been blind to our unworthiness here, and then that it will be unveil for us there, you know. But if we're awake to it here, and we, you know, speak to God about it, then we will be okay on that day, inshallah. You know, it's so amazing. And it says, yeah, if you put yourself low, Allah will lift you up. If you put yourself high, you will be abased. So, you know, are those that, the story of Jesus, you know, those who took the foremost place in the chamber, you know, and did not make room for others, then will be put back. But those who stayed back out of deference and humbleness will be moved forward and elevated. So, yeah, you know, humbleness, that's a good, another, in the relationship to Allah, you know. I mean, definitely gratitude and humbleness. What is servanthood? But main focus on Allah's, because sometimes if we focus too much on servanthood, then we can get lost. That's interesting, because we can, you know, unless again we just go to Allah and say, Allah, I'm just a poor servant. That's okay. So always turn to Allah's generosity. Always turn to it. It's Allah who is the generous. Allah who completes us. Allah who lifts us. Allah who perfects us. Allah who forgives us. Allah who loves us. Allah who cares for us. Allah who heals us. That our main attention should be there, you know. On Allah's own magnificence and beauty and love and compassion. And I think keep our focus there in the Rajab. And the Rajab definitely has that quality, you know. That's what's called the deaf month, because it doesn't hear the faults of the servants of people. Yeah. And so that's a sign of Allah.
And also it has three sacred diamond nights.
Yeah, that's amazing.
The first one, the Ragib that we just celebrated, and then the Ascension.
And the Ascension. Mm-hmm. That's amazing. Yeah, three are given to this month. That's true. Yeah. The Ascension on the 26th, the night of the 26th. And it also has, this year, Hazreti Pir's birthday. A solar birthday, right? May 4th, exactly, yeah. Mm-hmm. Which is Sunday, or Monday. So we mentioned keep a notebook. Good, yeah. That's very good. Good, good. And me too. I started a notebook. And funny enough, I just pulled this out of the shelves. And I, on the other side, I had, it obviously started the other way. It's funny. I didn't even know. I had studied a little bit with Bernie Glassman, the Living Buddha Zen, the transmission chapter. It was amazing. And so I have here, like, a very Zen-like orphan light. I don't know, is this from the book, or has no home, no analogy, casts no shadow, pervades no space, conceals nothing, cancels nothing. It simply shines, shines, shines. This is Noor. It must be Noor, I think. Yeah, that's Noor. Needle and water. Water passed from heart to heart, can't be spoken. Keep it pure. It is pure. Only the needle can enter it completely and not alter it. The needle of essence of the purified disciple. Effendi and Noor gave us this bowl of water, heart to heart. Look into it. Give it to others. Yeah. Which is another book to recommend, Living Buddha Zen. Amazing book, because it touches on the mystery of transmission from, you know, teacher to student, and whether there's something transmitted, or whether, you know, what is transmitted, or if it's how it occurs. So it's quite an amazing book. Yeah. You know, but this is our daily life. Our daily life is Allah. So it's more like to recognize it. I think that's the thing that came to it. Just let's recognize it. Let's recognize ourselves as these immense cosmic vessels, and at the same time, you know, the lowly lowly beings and exalted beings in one. I mean, it's the human form. Lowly and exalted.
I was just going to say the verse of Rumi that says, by myself I'm copper, but because of you I'm gold.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Just saying.
Oh, yeah.
Just
that's right, with
illustrating
this.
What you just said.
Exactly. That's beautiful. So, you know, these moments of, sometimes where you're in such a state or you're struggling with yourself, and then just there's just a little kind of turn or opening or breakthrough, you know, you can feel the mercy because you've somehow dropped away from yourself or something, but you can't do it. That's amazing. In some ways, it's kind of a mystery, but I do think if we just focus more on the beloved, mm-hmm. it happens better. It happens more easily, mm-hmm. you know. Mm. Yeah, kind of aware of our loneliness and of the greatness of Allah. You know, you can't speak this way sometimes because it's amazing, like in the world somehow, yeah. because people would... You can only speak this way to lovers. Mm-hmm. Because only a lover will accept this.
Just as you were talking before, I remembered something and I got the urge to tell you about it.
Good.
All of us. And it was right when you came in, which is also sort of beautiful. It's really nice. A good time, maybe like a year ago, or maybe even more, I was meditating on the teacher and how, like, what's the, you said something about the relationship between the guide and the student
mm-hmm.
just then, and mm-hmm. I was thinking a lot about that and why we needed teachers and how we learn from them.
Right.
And it came to me in a moment while I was here that it's like learning, like when you're a baby and you have to learn how to speak,
mm-hmm.
you know, how to communicate. It's like something that's inside of you, but
right.
you only learn it from... You can't learn a language to speak like by yourself.
Right.
You have to, it's only
right.
to communicate
right.
From another speaking
right.
to you.
But right.
that's like how
right.
a sheikh is to the student.
Right. That's even the, that's the further level. The initial level is even the connection to Allah. And so it's almost like the parent giving life to the child. And the, it's mysterious. And it's not due to any greatness. It's just, it's that link. That's what the silsila is. The silsila is the life-giving stream. And so that passes on. It, your heart is open to Allah, you know. And then, of course, the elevation of the sheikh, if, you know, however, whoever it is. So it's if a Musafir Effendi is like, wow, you learn, you know, a language like that. It's true. And here, alhamdulillah, inshallah, we have them present with us. So the language is even the second. The first is even having that, whatever that flame or that spark that will open the heart to Allah. It's amazing. I mean, it's a mystery. I've thought about it myself, you know, mm-hmm. much. It's that is the most important function. And
which
that
one?
The one of just that spark.
Mm-hmm.
The spark of heart to heart.
Mm-hmm.
And it can happen before the hand taking, after the hand taking. You know, it just jumps, leaps from heart to heart.
Yeah, sometimes the hand taking is just kind of a formality, no?
Yeah, or an affirmation. An affirmation,
mm-hmm.
let's say, of...
An affirmation, yeah.
Of that it... This is what it is, you know. Some it happens during the hand-taking, or they'll feel all of a sudden, you know, that sense of transmission.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the transmission is. The transmission is just whatever it is, that key, that goes into the heart, the other heart, or we call it a seed of light, or, you know, can be called many things. They're all metaphors, really, for what happens. But just like, I mean, Allah could give spontaneous birth to people. People could be born, could all be born, you know, like little eggs, you know, that appear spontaneously on the earth. But no, we're born through two parents, two human beings who come together, you know, and join as one, and then out comes the human form. So it's the same in the spiritual path. There is, it always goes back to the human, you know, so Allah is within the human form. And this is the way it's been designed. So, but what you speak of, Rumi spoke of too, you know, of the, it's true, and that's more like drinking the milk, you know, what we get in the milk and how we, I don't know, because we become so open with the hand-taking. We open as we, you know, only with a lover or something like that, and even more so. Our soul, our heart, we're so open that then it's really Allah teaching us. And, you know, yeah, it looks like it's the guide, and it's mm-hmm. true that it, there is definitely the color of the guide, like you would say that the light is tinted by, but it's really the divine light that is teaching each of us in that, in those ways, you know. And you become directly almost the, you know, Allah's mentee. And that beautiful phrase in Quran where Allah speaks to Moses and says, you were raised under my eye, you know. Mm-hmm. That's so beautiful.
Also, Sheikh, and I was reading today, now I know why, I guess.
In where?
Mm-hmm. A commentary on the hand-taking verse.
Oh, really?
And I didn't know why. I was reading that one, but now it's coming clear. And Allah says in the Quran, when the faithful took your hand under the tree, my hand was over your hand.
Right.
And that's our hand.
Over your hand or their hand?
Both.
Yeah.
Both of your hands.
Yeah.
Both mm-hmm. of your hands.
Yes.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. That's very beautiful. Yes. It's Allah all along.
Right.
You know, and that is the journey. That is the learning, that's what we learn, that it was Allah all along, it's, you know, but we just fell asleep or became unconscious. So this...
He became unconscious.
No.
Allah,
that's a very deep... yeah.
Well, I mean, if there is yes. nothing but Allah.
But Allah, yeah, right.
He plays.
That's true.
As the unconscious one, and
yeah, that's true.
And everything else.
Yeah, that's true. And as the one who wakes up, and as is true.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the point is in that mm-hmm. case to leave, to be able to experience love.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, in the sense that, I mean, I just wanted to finish.
Yeah. Yeah,
my point, because if not, it gets into a philosophical abstractness, you know. Mm-hmm. And the point of that is just to experience love. So in that sense, the two-ness, you know, has a meaning or sense.
Right.
You know. Because if not, then love wouldn't be experienced.
Right.
Because for to experience love, you need two.
Right. Yeah, no, that's true. That's true. That is true. Yeah.
I mean, that's more important than
yeah.
than the previous statement.
Yeah, which was what?
Which is that Allah becomes the unconscious and,
right,
you know,
right.
That's not so important as the point.
Of the love. Yeah, that's true. The whole thing is the drama of love.
Yeah, because I was even listening to Noor last night when I arrived. He was interviewing Pir Vilayat in his radio program. And he read a passage of Ibn al-Arabi. Mm-hmm. May Allah be pleased with his soul. And yeah, and this is the... as we all know, this kind of situation in which he is not inside, he is not outside.
Right.
You know, you're not inside of him, you're not outside of
right.
him.
Right.
So it is this kind of a paradox, you
right,
know.
Right, right,
I mean, a
right.
kind of Zen koan kind of
yeah.
paradox. And but yeah, but the point, what is the point of that? I think that that's the important thing is, what is the point of going into that oneness,
right?
You know, so that you can have the perspective of the two-ness,
right?
Okay, if that's
right.
so,
right.
If that's so, right. I mean, and Allah is one,
right.
and it's incomprehensible and
right.
unknowable and
right.
all that.
Right.
So, what is the point?
Right. Yeah.
So the point is love.
Yeah.
I mean,
right,
at
right,
least for the
right,
dervish
right. Yes, yes,
path,
yes, right.
which is the path of love.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe for other paths,
right.
there is emphasis in other dimensions. But, you know, for us, I think that that's that is just the most beautiful path.
Right. Right.
To see how Allah has become. The other, for
right.
you to be able
right.
to experience
right.
and lend, as so to speak, existence in order
right.
for you to experience love as if you were
right.
something else.
Right. So Allah could experience it.
Exactly.
Yeah, really.
Yeah.
That's the hidden treasure.
Exactly.
Longing to be known. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, wow. I feel like just reading Rumi now.
But isn't that one of the very real difficulties? And so often I was speaking to one of my elders last night. When we're babies and people tell us what love is and then abuse that trust and then, you know, what is love? And then we come into this path and our shields are stripped away.
Right.
And that's part of what leaves a new dervish so raw.
Right.
And what makes it so difficult those first few weeks, months, years.
Right.
Because so often we think we're not deserving of that love and
right.
that mercy. Because we've been trained.
Right.
To believe that love is something
that you have to earn. But, yeah, that's a very profound question. Were you here when we spoke of unworthiness? No, maybe you weren't.
Yeah.
No, right. Yeah, because we addressed that issue that in the world, you know, we're meant to feel unworthy in so many ways. But also I thought maybe it's part of our human condition, feeling unworthy, because we are judging ourselves. Our high spirit is judging our earth self as unworthy, you know.
Or we're conditioned to it.
And then we're conditioned to it through experiences. But that before Allah, being unworthy is very worthy, you know. That's the one place where we can completely unmask ourselves. And be absolutely unworthy, and that is so welcome to Allah, you know. And then Sheikh Amina brought this story about the dervish who traveled to heaven because he had something that Allah needs. So it turned out that what does Allah need but our own neediness, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's part of the dervish journey. But the journey is turning more and more to Allah for everything. But then, of course, it does return into creation. You know, there are different phases of the journey. And there's a phase where it's completely returned to the form of creation. You know, so both, you know, let's say when you'd see Musafir Effendi, he did not look like someone who was completely independent of creation, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And this was one of the very bewildering things about, maybe because we had been conditioned to think of the ultimate spiritual being as the one who didn't rely on the world. He was completely in responding, you know, to people, to creation, completely, because this is Allah, you know. So he was living that completely, and every sign, every, you know, would come to him through people and events and things. Mm-hmm. So, but you know, within that appearance or manifestation of Allah, we can still, in our heart, turn to Allah, and, you know, ask and beg, and we have an aloneness with Allah that is particular to each of us, and there is our refuge. You know, that's why we even say we take refuge in Allah from Allah. So,
I'm sorry.
No, you were saying something.
Yeah, the connection is so important. I think that I would frame these months into that particular vision of going deep to where the water is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I heard the other day that the Prophet had this hadith I never heard before, that that he liked three things very much, not maybe above everything else, but he liked water, o sea, he found beautiful the water, then the green things,
mm-hmm.
and then the beautiful faces, joyful.
Mm.
Mm. Faces.
Mm.
So that describes so much a person from the desert.
Mm-hmm. And I see his likes, the water and the green, right?
Yeah,
that's true.
But I'm that was just a footnote in order to say that to access the water. Yeah,
right.
To access the water, that would be kind of the point of intensifying a spiritual practice, in my view, and at my state, at this limited state of my life, I would say that to make the connection and access, and have access to the water, because you see, for example, in Mexico now, that in the last 5 years, they have kind of configured this war against drug traffickers.
Yeah.
I mean, they made these wars mm-hmm. from one day to the other, and now there are so many dead and so many disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
And they, obviously, the social kind of net...
A network or social, yeah.
Is completely messed up.
Right.
And
yeah.
I mean, it's very destructive, let's put it that way. So, I mean, like, who can say that you can be happy in a context like that? Like, who can be kind of in ecstasy or wanting ecstasy if there's so much pain and you know, and so much horror, because it's horrible. And then we have been addressing this in the community for a long time, praying for the soul of Mexico mm-hmm. to come up with a solution, you know, and all that. And then maybe 2 weeks ago or something, no, for the Holy Thursday, I found myself saying, well, we have to go in the Sohbet, we have to go deeper and find the joy that is underneath.
Right.
Which then in the Maghrib prayer of last Thursday, uh-huh. on the Ragged night, then I understood what was connected to that, in the sense of what I'm trying to say is that you do spiritual practice to go deeper and get access to the water of mm-hmm. life, let's mm-hmm. say to the joy that doesn't depend on circumstances,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
you know, because obviously, if your joy is going to be depending on circumstances, this is not the joy that the mystics or the, you know, Milarepa or Mevlana would experience or would talk about. I mean, or Jesus, or Muhammad.
Yeah.
So that one of the things that I, at least, I'm seeing right now in my life is that spiritual practice has to do specifically with with having access
to the water,
to beyond, to the water that is beyond the superficial circumstances.
Right. Well, this brings up a question, because it's certainly something I've thought about in relation to, you know, these months and with the idea of going deeper with practice. And but sometimes I feel that some of us, you know, are already, you know, how can we do more, you know? But maybe it's a question of, again, maybe withdrawing from some of the entertainments. I mean, I think it takes contemplating our day and making priorities and seeing, really, understanding what we do during our day. So, it, again, spiritual practice leads to consciousness. And how are we spending our day? And because, you know, often dervishes come and they say, but I have no time, you know. And I understand that. I mean, and it happens to me too. But when I look more with the microscope at my time, it's really, I have no time because I'm leaving large segments unconscious, you know. And so even if we don't have time to sit, you know, for a longer time, in the morning or at night, and but those are, you know, let's say designated times, divinely designated, that are very good for spiritual practice. And you can eke out a little more time, both in the morning and at night, and then in between. I mean, you know, as we're walking in the street, as we're in the subway, as we're, whatever, waiting, you know, it's hard to do it when you're shopping, but you can, you know, Yashakur or you know, Yahalik, who created all this, to bring consciousness, really, to one's day, I think. So that's already a way to bring more spiritual practice. And you can do your tesbi, but it's not as easy, though. Definitely not to focus. In the subway, yes, there's something mystical about the underground, like the, you know, the old caverns or the... it has that. And then you're with humanity. There's something very profound about the subway. I used to always feel, when I lived in the city, I always had a kind of spiritual joy in the subway. funny enough. Once I'm at a Fendi. No, but that something of the humanity being in the, you know, what are they called? The catacombs. Or, and that's one. And the other is simply... not so much just tesbi practice, but consciousness, you know, that you can bring through your entire day. And that's where the awareness, whether it's through gratitude or just developing that more continuous relation to Allah throughout our day, you know, that's important. And Allah says, you know, I am closer to you than your jugular vein. And so... and so that's an amazing statement, you know, just to contemplate that nearness. I mean, that would be great. I think we should all contemplate that nearness, right? You know, because we said the prophet, I just want to finish this one thought, the prophet traveled, you know, in the mirage, which is coming this month, you know, closer than two bone lengths. So when Allah tells us that I am closer to you than your own jugular vein, that's something of that closeness, you know. So for us to realize it and to contemplate it. So much is given to us that we're not even, so many gifts that we're not even opening, you know, haven't even opened the ribbon yet. So that's one of them. That's a tremendous gift that Allah reveals. And, you know, there are all these gifts and we just have to really open them and spend time with them. And so... I think that we should contemplate in this Rajab. I am closer to you than your own jugular vein. So, yeah. What are you going to say?
Is that what in the tradition is called taqwa? Or no? Or what? Would you call it differently?
What, though?
Taqwa, this kind of being aware.
Conscious or awareness.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I would say, I mean, along with the...
It's translated sometimes as fear, you know, of
right.
Allah.
Yeah.
But
or
it's not right,
no,
the translation.
Or like kind of an awareness that has a sense of, you know, that in turn makes you more careful and more careful and more a better person. I think that's taqwa is to me that. It's both the awareness, but it's an awareness that makes you a better person, makes you more conscious and careful and loving and all of those things, I think. Mm-hmm. So sort of a double. Because I guess you could say theoretically we could be aware. I don't know if it's possible or if it's just a, you know, hypothetical. Can you be, you know, aware? Could one actually be aware of Allah and not have that immediate, spontaneous inner response of, you know, awe and humbleness? And I don't, not as a human being. Mm-hmm. If as a human being you become aware, I think you would have to be a very strange human being, you know, not to, if you were just aware of Allah and not have that.
Yeah, I mean, just kind of to be present for Allah, no? Yeah. Is that to detect Allah,
right,
or to perceive?
Mm-hmm. Right.
That would be helpful, no?
Yeah, very helpful.
I mean, to be in the state, in an intensified or an increased state of of being present for Allah.
Being present for Allah, yeah.
For perceiving.
Right. So right here,
Allah
is, you know. Allah is right here. Right.
Yeah,
here,
like
right.
Like you know, Hazreti Pir's khutbah, if you recall.
Uh-huh.
The khutbah that he said at some point, that
uh-huh.
was when we all get to the afterlife, Allah is going to ask us just one question. You remember that?
No, I don't think I ever saw that khutbah.
Yeah, I'm sure. And he said, Allah is going to ask us, I have been with you all the time.
Oh.
Where you had been?
Oh, where were you?
Where were you?
How beautiful. Wow, where were you? Yeah, that's beautiful. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
So that's, again, well, let's write that in our notebooks. You know.
And that was the whole khutbah.
Wow, really?
Wow.
Wow, that's beautiful. So this is a great, these are great contemplations, yeah, for the month of Rajab. Yeah, alhamdulillah. Alhamdulillah. And love is the most beautiful way of return, you know, through love. Because that's what Allah feels for us. So that is coming, you know, returning in Allah's own way. To returning in the same way that Allah created us. That we return. Yeah. But
in the same way.
Way that, you know, Allah created us for love. I longed to be
uh-huh,
known, that's my
uh-huh.
longing essential, that is at the essence of everything that brought all this forth. And so if we return with that same quality or that essence, then that's the most beautiful, you know, that's the most beautiful.
With the quality of
love.
Love.
As you said, you brought it, yeah, to the fore. But that we also learn. We learn how to love, and that's what a Sufi community is partly about. You know, it's the language you were mentioning, Amina. The language of love we learn here. We learn how to be with each other, how to be, you know, gracious, and how to be overlooking, and all the qualities of a lover. I mean, we learn in ourself and in our own daily experience, but very much this is, you might say, the school of love, or the, yeah. Because only here can we really be lovers, you know. It's not easy to be a lover in the world, but then when we reach a level of Mansur and so forth, you know, then you can go be a lover in the street. But here, it's so easy for us to be lovers. We can be completely open. You know, that struck me. I was just writing a little postscript for the book that's coming out for Effendi.
Mm-hmm.
And And it that was one of the things that, you know, kind of raised that came through. It was that for the first time in my life, you know, I could cry out to God, to cry out to Allah in company with others, you know. Before that, you know, I'd go off somewhere. Not that I cried out, I was kind of looking for God in nature and different places, but that together we can do this mm-hmm. now. That's so
coming
amazing.
Out of the closet.
Coming out. It's true. Yeah, we all came out of the closet, you know. Yeah, and that's also why we love each other so much, you know, because we're just these particles that form a whole. Let's read a little bit from Sufi Science, and we'll take one of those. Yeah, the first one which struck me was knowledge. Exactly. You know, Effendi said, right? Seek yes. knowledge. I mean, this speaks of what we're speaking of, you know. The cardinal, so I'll start on this is page 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4. This is the fifth paragraph. So we'll read a paragraph. The cardinal secret of Sufism can be expressed in this hermetic formula: physiology is theology. So physiology is theology. Human, the precious human body demands a spiritual interpretation, an esoteric hermeneutics. The cosmos experiences accelerated evolution when human life is transmuted by the mystic love that is true wisdom. Mm. The cosmos experiences accelerated evolution when human life is transmuted by the mystic love that is true wisdom. Mm. Wow. Wow. So love is the highest. It's the highest essence of our human life. When human existence orients and submits consciously to supreme unity as its own inner core. The esoteric meaning of the sacred text of our subtle body is the base of the underlying conviction of Sufi science. Perfect correspondence between earth and paradise, between sensation and supra-sensation.
Can you say again?
Yeah. The esoteric meaning of the sacred text of our subtle body is the base of the underlying conviction of Sufi science. Perfect correspondence between earth and paradise, between sensation and supra-sensation. Mm. So sensation, I am the hearing, and the seeing is the supra-sensation. Sensation is I hear and I see. Supra-sensation, I am the hearing and the seeing. Mm. Free from sectarian dogmatism, Sufism is not an abstract conceptuality, but an intimate knowing, the fruit of direct experience, acquired through various modes of spiritual deepening and Gnostic unveiling. Mm. This Sufi way of knowing ends in illuminative and transformative union, final goal of the arcane path of purification, the ancient road of love and wisdom. This Sufi way of knowing ends in illuminative and transformative union, final goal of the arcane path of purification, the ancient road of love and wisdom.
Our human experience elevated to its highest level during the 1001 luminous nights of mystical practice culminates when the creature becomes transfigured by the unique light of essence. The fundamental principle of Sufi science is the aptitude of the human spirit to participate totally in divine essence.
Wait, read that again.
our human experience elevated to its highest level during the thousand and one luminous nights of mystical experience culminates when the creature becomes transfigured by the unique light of essence. Mm-hmm. The fundamental principle of Sufi science is the aptitude of the human spirit to participate fully in divine essence. Mm. Logically and theologically impossible, this wedding between finite and infinite allows the aspirant to abandon the limited self completely in order to enter essential reality. Mm. Logically and theologically impossible, this wedding between the finite and infinite allows the aspirant to abandon the limited self completely in order to enter its essential reality. This can occur only through the great ecstasy that lifts one beyond the conventional invocation of some divinity who remains separate or distant. Such ecstasy...
Oh, so read that again. This can occur...
This can occur, meaning the marriage, mm-hmm. The wedding between finite and infinite can occur only through the great ecstasy that lifts one beyond the conventional invocation of some divinity who remains separate or distant. Mm. Such ecstasy of insight liberates us from the ambiguous or conflictive situations that we illusorily identify as our own humanity. Mm. Mm. Such ecstasy unveils essence. Hmm.
Hmm. Mashallah. 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 So I think that's enough, for...
Just to add that it's not a solo flight.
Oh, he said that. It's not a solo flight. In the next paragraph. No, that's what we said today. It's not a solo flight.
Right.
Inshallah, we continue with this. It's almost more something you absorb. You can't hold it almost with your mind when you read this text of Sufi science. It's so subtle and sublime that it's not a mental thing. It's even though some people might mistake Noor for being mental, he's not mental. He's on a level of the soul. This is the soul light. And this is what, so we listen, inshallah, we hear, and it just... We absorb it. It's just like breathing the air. This is how we absorb Noor. Alhamdulillah. Well, this is a very beautiful one, too, of Effendi. And this is to earn lawfully by the sweat of one's brow, to consume lawfully acquired sustenance, and to wear lawfully acquired clothes. Wow, that's intense. That's very intense. And lawfully, what does it mean lawfully? It means not harming someone else, not harming oneself or harming someone else. That's, I think, the meaning here of lawfully. In keeping with the harmony of humanity and the harmony of the cosmos and... by the sweat of one's brow. So it doesn't mean we have to, literally sweat, but it means we put effort into, and it's inevitable. Whatever job, even the most, billionaires, they still have to, it might not be so long, that's the problem, is the richer you get, the more questionable it can be. But not always, but it can be, because then the more there's potential for harming others and taking away someone else's right. And But, you know, there are jobs that maybe are not lawful and yet do not earn that much. So it definitely we have to contemplate how we earn our living. Mm-hmm. To consume lawfully, but it can mean really also making effort toward, because we are in the world. And Adam was, after all, and Eve together was sent down. And it said that, you know, you will earn your food through the sweat and through work, through toil. And we have that. Our everyday has that in it. Every day has toil as part of it. Even no matter how much, you know, joyful we can be, there is still that element of our body and toiling to live. To consume lawfully acquired sustenance. But, so what is lawfully acquired sustenance? Yeah. Food that is halal. And that is, again, food that was not acquired by harming others. You know, if we really apply this.
And using what Allah gave you.
Yeah.
The point is that you
sharing.
Invest.
Yeah.
What Allah gave you in earning your living.
Yeah.
No?
No, in what sense?
I mean that you have all these faculties and...
Oh, I see.
All these talents. So that's lawful.
Yeah, that's true.
Earning.
Yeah, like writing could be, or... And of course, any of that. That's
so
true.
You invest in the well-being of the community.
Yeah.
What you have...
Through your talents.
Exactly.
That's true.
And then you
that's
earn
true.
Your living.
That's true.
Your food.
Yeah. And food is, again, food on all levels. It's not just
right.
physical food, but it's what you look at, what you listen to, you know. Anything that you that comes into you to
mm-hmm.
any level of your being is your sustenance. So even one's own thoughts are one's sustenance, you know. So where is our... do we lawfully feed ourselves? If we have bad thoughts, that's not lawful sustenance. We are not feeding ourselves lawful, well, let's say, in harmony. And to wear lawfully acquired clothes. Yeah. And again, clothes, you know, it's both our dress. And, you know, but people, how were they, you know, this is an issue that has come up among very socially minded people. Were the clothes produced in places where other people suffer, where children were making the clothes? Or, you know, this is definitely a worthwhile question to ask and to look into. So, mm-hmm. to look into the origin, you know, of
right.
things. And okay.
As in food, yeah.
As in food, yeah. Exactly. So... everything that surrounds us, our life, you know, everything that comes to us, we desire it to be pleasing to Allah and to be helpful for humanity and not harming humanity. So, inshallah, we have to keep praying for that, because this is where, when we say, oh Allah, please forgive me for the mistakes I know and for those I don't know. A lot of, you know, we are acquiring things, things happen that we just don't, we're participating in, we don't know. So that's why we also ask for Allah to forgive us for those we don't know. Like, if we have our clothes produced in places that might be difficult for people,
mm-hmm.
you know, sweatshops around the world, and so,
mm-hmm.
You know, it's almost, actually, if you look at it, there's almost no way to be halal. Almost, it's like, you know, it's very hard.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we have to just ask
well,
for
yeah.
forgiveness.
I
no?
would say
what
the opposite, that it's
okay.
so easy to be haram. No?
It's so easy to be haram, uh-huh. yeah, yeah. Yeah, and that's just part of being on earth. And that's why, again, that's one of the relations to Allah that we were speaking of earlier, we need to ask forgiveness. And the Prophet asks 100 times a day. And so we need to ask forgiveness every day from Allah.